Chapter 53. Madame Mantalini finds herself in a situation of some difficulty, and Miss Nickleby finds herself in no situation at all. The agitation she had undergone rendered Kate Nickleby unable to resume her duties at the dressmaker's for 3 days, at the expiration of which interval she betook herself at the accustomed hour, and with languid steps, to the Temple of Fashion, where Madame Mantalini reigned paramount and supreme. The ill will of Miss Knagg had lost nothing of its virulence in the interval. The young ladies still scrupulously shrunk from all companionship with their denounced associate, and when that exemplary female arrived a few minutes afterwards, she was at no pains to conceal the displeasure with which she regarded Kate's return. "Upon my word," said Miss Knagg, as the satellites flocked round to relieve her of her bonnet and shawl, "I should have thought some people would have had spirit enough to stop away altogether, when they know what an encumbrance their presence is to right-minded persons. But it's a queer world, oh, it's a queer world." Miss Knagg, having passed this comment on the world, in the tone in which most people do pass comments on the world, when they are out of temper, that is to say, as if they by no means belong to it, concluded by heaving a sigh, wherewith she seemed meekly to compassionate the wickedness of mankind. The attendants were not slow to echo the sigh, and Miss Knagg was apparently on the eve of favoring them with some further moral reflections, when the voice of Madame Mantalini, conveyed through the speaking tube, ordered Miss Nickleby upstairs to assist in the arrangement of the showroom, a distinction which caused Miss Knagg to toss her head so much, and bite her lips so hard, that her powers of conversation were, for the time, annihilated. "Well, Miss Nickleby, child," said Madame Mantalini, when Kate presented herself, "are you quite well again?" "A great deal better, thank you," replied Kate. "I wish I could say the same," remarked Madame Mantalini, seating herself with an air of weariness. "Are you ill?" asked Kate. "I am very sorry for that." "Not exactly ill, but worried, child, worried," rejoined Madame. "I am still more sorry to hear that," said Kate, gently. "Bodily illness is more easy to bear than mental." "And it's much easier to talk than to bear either," said Madame, rubbing her nose with much irritability of manner. "There, get to your work, child, and put the things in order, do." While Kate was wondering within herself what these symptoms of unusual vexation portended, Mr. Mantalini put the tips of his whiskers, and, by degrees, his head, through the half-open door, and cried in a soft voice, "Is my life and soul there?" "No," replied his wife. "How can it say so, when it is blooming in the front room like a little rose in a Domitian flower pot?" Urged Mantalini. "May its poppet come in and talk?"
"Certainly not," replied Madame. "You know I never allow you here. Go along." The poppet, however, encouraged perhaps by the relenting tone of this reply, ventured to rebel, and, stealing into the room, made towards Madame Mantalini on tiptoe, blowing her a kiss as he came along. "Why will it vex itself, and twist its little face into bewitching nutcrackers?" Said Mantalini, putting his left arm round the waist of his life and soul, and drawing her towards him with his right. "Oh, I can't bear you," replied his wife. "Not bear me?" exclaimed Mantalini. Fibs. "It couldn't be. There's not a woman alive that could tell me such a thing to my face, to my own face." Mr. Mantalini stroked his chin as he said this, and glanced complacently at an opposite mirror. "Such destructive extravagance," reasoned his wife, in a low tone. "All in its joy at having gained such a lovely creature, such a little Venus, such a damned, enchanting, bewitching, engrossing, captivating little Venus, apostrophe said Mantellini. See what a situation you have placed me in, apostrophe apostrophe urged Madam. No harm will come, no harm shall come, to its own darling, apostrophe rejoined Mr. Mantellini. It is all over, there will be nothing the matter, money shall be got in, and if it don't come in fast enough, old Nickleby shall stump up again, or have his jugular separated, if he dares to vex, and hurt the little apostrophe, hush. Apostrophe apostrophe interposed Madam. Don't you see? Apostrophe, Mr. Mantellini, who, in his eagerness to make up matters with his wife, had overlooked, or feigned to overlook, Miss Nickleby hitherto, took the hint, and laying his finger on his lip, sunk his voice still lower. There was, then, a great deal of whispering, during which Madame Mantellini appeared to make reference, more than once, to certain debts incurred by Mr. Mantellini previous to her coverture, and also to an unexpected outlay of money in payment of the aforesaid debts, and furthermore, to certain agreeable weaknesses on that gentleman's part, such as gaming, wasting, idling, and a tendency to horseflesh, each of which matters of accusation Mr. Mantellini disposed of, by one kiss or more, as its relative importance demanded. The upshot of it all was, that Madame Mantellini was in raptures with him, and that they went upstairs to breakfast. Kate busied herself in what she had to do, and was silently arranging the various articles of decoration in the best taste she could display, when she started to hear a strange man's voice in the room, and started again, to observe, on looking round, that a white hat, and a red neckerchief, and a broad round face, and a large head, and part of a green coat, were in the room too. Don't alarm yourself, miss, apostrophe said the proprietor of these appearances. I say, this here's the man he making concern, and it? Apostrophe, yes, apostrophe rejoined Kate, greatly astonished. What did you want? Apostrophe, the stranger answered not. But, first looking back, as though to beckon to some unseen person outside, came, very deliberately, into the room, and was closely followed by a little man in brown, very much the worse for wear, who brought with him a mingled fumigation of stale tobacco and fresh onions. The clothes of this gentleman were much bespectacled with flue, and his shoes, stockings, and nether garments, from his heels to the waist buttons of his coat inclusive, were profusely embroidered with splashes of mud, caught a fortnight previously before the setting in of the fine weather. Kate's very natural impression was, that these engaging individuals had called with the view of possessing themselves, unlawfully, of any portable articles that chanced to strike their fancy. She did not attempt to disguise her apprehensions, and made a move towards the door. Wait a minute, apostrophe said the man in the green coat, closing it softly, and standing with his back against it. This is a unpleasant business. Where's your governor? Apostrophe, my what did you say? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Kate, trembling, for she thought governor might be slang for watcher money. Mr. Mantellini, apostrophe said the man. What's come on him? Is he at home? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he is above stairs, I believe, apostrophe replied Kate, a little reassured by this inquiry. Do you want him? Apostrophe, no, apostrophe replied the visitor. I don't exactly want him, if it's made a favor on. You can just give him that ear card, and tell him, if he wants to speak to me, and save trouble, here I am, that's all. Apostrophe, with these words, the stranger put a thick square card into Kate's hand, and, turning to his friend, remarked, with an easy air, that the room's was a good high pitch, apostrophe to which the friend assented, adding, by way of illustration, that there was lots of room for a little boy, to grow up a man in either on them, without much fear of his ever bringing his head into contact with the ceiling. Apostrophe, after ringing the bell which would summon Madame Mantellini,
Kate glanced at the card, and saw that it displayed the name of Scully, apostrophe together with some other information to which she had not had time to refer, when her attention was attracted by Mr. Scully himself, who, walking up to one of the cheval glasses, gave it a hard poke in the center with his stick, as coolly as if it had been made of cast iron. "Good plate this here, Tix," apostrophe said Mr. Scully to his friend. "Ah. Apostrophe apostrophe," rejoined Mr. Tix, placing the marks of his four fingers, and a duplicate impression of his thumb, on a piece of sky blue silk, "and this here article weren't made for nothing, mind you." Apostrophe, from the silk, Mr. Tix transferred his admiration to some elegant articles of wearing apparel, while Mr. Scully adjusted his neckcloth, at leisure, before the glass, and afterwards, aided by its reflection, proceeded to the minute consideration of a pimple on his chin, in which absorbing occupation he was yet engaged, when Madame Mantalini, entering the room, uttered an exclamation of surprise which roused him. "Oh! Is this the Miss Sis?" apostrophe inquired Scully. "It is Madame Mantalini," apostrophe said Kate. "Then," apostrophe said Mr. Scully, producing a small document from his pocket and unfolding it very slowly, "this is a writ of execution, and if it's not convenient to settle, we'll go over the house at once, please, and take the inventory." Apostrophe, poor Madame Mantalini wrung her hands for grief, and rung the bell for her husband, which done, she fell into a chair and a fainting fit, simultaneously. The professional gentlemen, however, were not at all discomposed by this event, for Mr. Scully, leaning upon the stand on which a handsome dress was displayed, so that his shoulders appeared above it, in nearly the same manner as the shoulders of the lady for whom it was designed would have done, if she had had it on, pushed his hat on one side, and scratched his head with perfect unconcern, while his friend Mr. Tix, taking that opportunity for a general survey of the apartment preparatory to entering on business, stood with his inventory book under his arm, and his hat in his hand, mentally occupied in putting a price upon every object within his range of vision. Such was the posture of affairs, when Mr. Mantalini hurried in, and as that distinguished specimen had had a pretty extensive intercourse with Mr. Scully's fraternity in his bachelor days, and was, besides, very far from being taken by surprise on the present agitating occasion, he merely shrugged his shoulders, thrust his hands down to the bottom of his pockets, elevated his eyebrows, whistled a bar or two, swore an oath or two, and, sitting astride upon a chair, put the best face upon the matter with great composure and decency. "What's the dem total?" apostrophe apostrophe was the first question he asked. £1,527, 4 and 9 pence halfpenny," apostrophe replied Mr. Scully, without moving a limb. "The halfpenny be demmed," apostrophe said Mr. Mantalini, impatiently. "By all means, if you wish it," apostrophe retorted Mr. Scully. "And the 9 pence?" Apostrophe, "it don't matter to us, if the £1,527 went along with it, that I know on," apostrophe observed Mr. Tix. "Not a button," apostrophe said Scully. "Well," apostrophe said the same gentleman, after a pause, "what's to be done anything? Is it only a small crack, or a out-and-out smash? A breakup of the Constitution, is it? Very good. Then Mr. Tom Tix, Esquire, you must inform your angel wife, and lovely family as you won't sleep at home for 3 nights to come, along of being in possession here. What's the good of the lady a-fretting herself?" apostrophe continued Mr. Scully, as Madame Mantalini sobbed. "A good half of what's here isn't paid for, I dare say, and what a consolation oughtn't that to be to her feelings." Apostrophe apostrophe, with these remarks, combining great pleasantry with sound moral encouragement under difficulties, Mr. Scully proceeded to take the inventory, in which delicate task he was materially assisted by the uncommon tact and experience of Mr. Tix, the broker.
My cup of happiness is sweetener, apostrophe said Mantellini, approaching his wife with a penitent air. Will you listen to me for 2 minutes? Apostrophe apostrophe, oh. Don't speak to me, apostrophe replied his wife, sobbing. You have ruined me, and that's enough. Apostrophe, Mr. Mantellini, who had doubtless well considered his part, no sooner heard these words pronounced in a tone of grief and severity, than he recoiled several paces, assumed an expression of consuming mental agony, rushed headlong from the room, and was, soon afterwards, heard to slam the door of an upstairs dressing room with great violence. Miss Nickleby, apostrophe cried Madame Mantellini, when this sound met her ear, make haste, for heaven's sake, he will destroy himself. I spoke unkindly to him, and he cannot bear it from me. Alfred, my darling Alfred. Apostrophe, with such exclamations, she hurried upstairs, followed by Kate who, although she did not quite participate in the fond wife's apprehensions, was a little flurried, nevertheless. The dressing room door being hastily flung open, Mr. Mantellini was disclosed to view, with his shirt collar symmetrically thrown back, putting a fine edge to a breakfast knife by means of his razor strop. Ah! Apostrophe apostrophe cried Mr. Mantellini, apostrophe interrupted. Apostrophe and whisk went the breakfast knife into Mr. Mantellini's dressing gown pocket, while Mr. Mantellini's eyes rolled wildly, and his hair floating in wild disorder, mingled with his whiskers. Alfred, apostrophe cried his wife, flinging her arms about him, I didn't mean to say it, I didn't mean to say it. Apostrophe apostrophe, ruined. Apostrophe apostrophe cried Mr. Mantellini. Have I brought ruin upon the best and purest creature that ever blessed a damnation vagabond? Damn it, let me go. Apostrophe at this crisis of his ravings Mr. Mantellini made a pluck at the breakfast knife, and being restrained by his wife's grasp, attempted to dash his head against the wall taking very good care to be at least 6 feet from it. Compose yourself, my own angel, apostrophe said madam. It was nobody's fault. It was mine as much as yours. We shall do very well yet. Come, Alfred, come. Apostrophe, Mr. Mantellini did not think proper to come to, all at once, but. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.